The Mike Lupica Podcast.
New York Daily News columnist and best-selling author.
Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In-your-face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we'll be talking with my friend, the great Bob Costas. But before we get started with Bob, this from BarkBox. BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys for your dog from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. Each monthly box is themed, like Country Fair or Brooklyn Hipster, and packed with new and unique toys that continue to keep dogs engaged, like my three lunatic Norwich Terriers, interested and happy. Every month, BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs, including allergies and heavy chewer preferences. If your dog does not like something in the box, they'll send you something they will love for free. Because BarkBox is all about dog happiness, free shipping on any BarkBox within the continental United States. My dogs are going to love it when the treats and toys show up at the door. It will keep them happy, and it's convenient for me and for my family. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/Lupica when you subscribe to a 6 or a 12-month plan. That's BarkBox/Lupica to get a free month when you subscribe to a 6 or 12-month plan. Check them out today and make your dog happy. Well, welcome to the Mike Lupica Podcast, and our guest today is someone who has been on twice before, and I think he's the first guy to be on three times, and I'll tell you why.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why, because Bob Costas knows more about sports than anybody I know, and I've always tried to follow the Jimmy Breslin rule of life, which is to hang around with people smarter than you. You know him from what I believe is the greatest career anybody has ever had in sports broadcasting. He is getting ready for the baseball playoffs right now. They probably wish they still had him on Sunday Night Football, just at halftime on Sunday night after everything that had happened, not only here, but in London. And there's just when this much stuff is happening in sports, including, you know, the Southern District of New York coming for college basketball. I call Costas, and we'll attempt to figure it out over the next 45 minutes or so. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? You know, on Saturday Night Live, when someone I think has hosted five times, like Tom Hanks, I think John Goodman and other people, they give them a special jacket with an insignia, like they're a member of a special club.
Do you
have that?
Well, except with us, you know, with us, if it had a three on it, the people would assume that we were two of the Three Stooges. So I think we should probably stay away from that, so people won't ask where Curly is. Bob, you know,
or Shemp, who's very overlooked.
By the way, okay, that leads me into something here. Okay, before we get to all the pressing issues of sports. And I hate to steal from myself, but I want you to tell the story of how you used to torture poor Tony Kubek sometimes with Three Stooges references while you were doing the game of the week on Saturday afternoon.
You know, it only happened one time, but it was at Wrigley Field around 1985 or 86. And there were three guys dressed up down the left field line as the Three Stooges. And so one was Moe with the Moe haircut, and one was Curly, who ironically had no hair at all, and Larry Fine had bushy sort of Harpo Marx type hair, or Malcolm Gladwell these days. So a line drive goes down the left field line, and it lands near these three guys, and they're in the frame of the picture. And I say, Tony, there they are, those artists of cinema, the Three Stooges. Moe, Larry, Curly, which is your favorite? And he's kind of flummoxed, and he goes, I don't know, I think I'll go with Curly. And then I just threw in, you know who's always overlooked, and that includes today? Shemp. He was like a utility stooge. He'd come off the bench and fill any role in case, for example, Curley was on the DL after Mo hit him on the head with a pipe, which he seemed to do three or four times an episode, but Curley would recover by the next frame. They were sort of the lowbrow answer to the Marx Brothers, and by low, I mean in capital letters, L-O-W, low.
And by the way, Kubek, now that I think of it, wasn't the only one of your broadcast partners that you would drag into your sick and twisted dramas about the Three Stooges. You, Costas, you used to do the same with poor Bob Trumpy.
Yeah, and Trumpy was even more flummoxed by it because Trump would intensely focus on the action on the field. I loved Trump. There was something about him.
I think you should make it clear that Trump was...
Oh, you're right. How foolish of me in this day and age. I think even Trumpy himself is opting for a different nickname these days. But everyone did call him Trump, as a matter of fact. Great tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals and then a very good broadcaster for NBC for a long time. In fact, moved up at one point to work with Dick Enberg and did the Super Bowl with Dick. But Bob could get a little bit intense, and this doesn't have anything to do with the Stooges, and eventually I guess we'll get to something more topical than things that happened 30 years ago. But Richard Todd was the quarterback for the Jets, and how they wish he was still active these days. But Todd had a habit, which Trumpy pointed out, yeah. He was right-handed, and he would tap the ball with his left hand just before he was about to release it. So Trumpy says, as we go through several replays, look at this. Even if he's looking off the primary receiver and he's going to his second or third option, the defense knows when he's about to release because he taps it with his left hand and then he releases. And I think that's tragic, says Trumpy. And I say, well, it may be unfortunate from a football perspective, but don't you think tragic overstates it a little bit? Shouldn't we save tragedy for in case the stadium collapses or something like that? And Trumpy insists, because this was part of his charm, no, it's tragic.
Tragic.
And as he concludes that sentence, a pass flutters incomplete on third down. And I say, okay, fair enough. And now, tragically, the Jets must punt.
We're talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lupica podcast. Okay, Bob, I happened to be in London last weekend when all of the demonstrations began before the Jaguars-Ravens game. And before I lead you into opinions that you have shared this week on this subject, Bob, do you think that considering the scope of what you've done on television, and I'm just talking about somebody who's bounced back and forth between the front of the Daily News and the back now for 10 years, is this finally, gracefully, the end of, well, can't we just stick to sports? And can't we keep politics out of sports?
I don't know that you'll ever hear the end of it, but I think it certainly disarmed that argument to a significant extent. A lot of us aren't eager to wade into politics, but when politics intersects with sports, and in this case it's everywhere, it's on the front page of newspapers and magazines, it's the lead story in many newscasts or on the 24-hour news stations that pick their topics and they base it partly on news value and partly on what people are interested in because they're trying to draw eyeballs. When it gets to that level, how are you going to avoid it? And you and I are about the same age. We grew up in the age of Muhammad Ali, of Kurt Flood, of Tommy Smith and John Carlos, of yep. Billie Jean King, Arthur Ashe, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the list is long, and before us, Jackie Robinson and others. Even Joe Louis, although people tried to tiptoe around it, or Jesse Owens, even if they themselves were relatively apolitical, their presence, given the context, had a sociological aspect to it. And if you're unable to come to terms with that in some way, then you're blind. Now, that doesn't mean you have to beat people over the head with it, and you don't do it at the expense of the game itself. Never once have I done it with the bases loaded in the ninth inning right. with 10 seconds to go in the game. And in fact, most of what I have done, especially since the turn of the 21st century, outside of the MLB network, is not play-by-play. It's in a pregame situation. It's in a halftime situation. Or I'm on CNN because they've asked me to be on. Or I'm on a program like I used to have on HBO, which is separate from the games themselves. But even then, people say, stick to sports. Well, what game am I getting in the way of? If there's a game you want to watch, change the channel and watch the game. And it doesn't matter how well thought out and measured and reasonable what you say might be. If it's something that someone does not want to hear, then it's stick to sports. On the other hand, if it's something they do want to hear, Bob Knight, who we both know, and despite how cantankerous he can be, for whatever reason, we both have a good relationship with Bob Knight. Bob Knight was frequently on Fox because he supported Trump. And Fox would put him on, and they'd ask his viewpoint about various things. And it was like, yeah, we have another political expert here. We have another pundit here. Why? Because he was saying things they wanted to say, or they wanted to have said. And but if you say something that they don't agree with or that they don't want to hear, then you're outside your lane and you should stick to sports.
Then you're liberal Bob Costas and liberal
far,
Mike.
Far left.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to hurry through this because I'm off to lunch with Noam Chomsky as soon as we finish.
We're talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lubica podcast. All right. Look, there's so much to unpack with what happened last weekend. But, Bob, to me, the biggest false narrative involved in this conversation, wherever people weigh in on it, is the following. Protest is unpatriotic. That if somehow you protest, you are not a good American. And, you know, my 93-year-old war hero father has always said to me, you know, when I was flying B-24s in the 1940s, I wasn't picking which freedoms I thought I was fighting for.
Wow, that's a great statement.
I was fighting for all of them, okay? And the fact is that honorable protest in this country is as American as the flag. And, Bob, you know that I wrote this the other day. What is ironic to me is that the same people who now throw themselves at the flag and wrap themselves in the flag will use politics in sports anytime they want to as long as it suits their narrative, which is exactly what the President of the United States is doing right now.
Yeah, no question about that. In fairness, there are also some people who say, A, we recognize the right to protest, and B, some of them actually see the initial issue that Kaepernick and others were trying to focus on, which is unequal justice and police misconduct, which doesn't mean that all or even most policemen are guilty of it, but if even a significant number are, then you have a problem. There are people who actually even agree with that who say, you know what, the national anthem is not the best place to do it because the national anthem means so many different things, you run the risk of alienating or confusing some people who are potentially persuadable. Not the bumper sticker patriots who want Colin Kaepernick to be sent to Siberia, but people who are potentially persuadable still might have mixed feelings at best about this being directly attached to the anthem. So I wouldn't say that every single person who objected to the initial protests was against protesting itself. They just had a problem with it being attached to the national anthem. And whether you agree with that or not, that's a legitimate discussion to have. Those people are not closed-minded, and they're potentially persuadable.
I'm going to read back your own words to you. Bob got a chance to talk about this at length on CNN the other day, and it was a perfect format because he wasn't asked to condense a really complicated conversation into 5 or 6 minutes. And here just a couple of things that he said. The reaction is so universal, including from prominent NFL owners who have supported and donated to Trump's campaign and to his inaugural committee. You have not heard a single person within the NFL raise a voice in support of what Trump said. What's happened here is that what was already an issue raised primarily by Colin Kaepernick has expanded beyond the specific point that Kaepernick was trying to make, which is a very valid point, and now it's become near universal disgust with the president's insulting remarks. Okay, Bob, so what I'm asking you is this. How much of this is the tortured point that Trump was making and continues to make, and even referenced Walter Reed yesterday, is somehow, if you did this before a football game, you're disrespecting the soldiers who are still suffering at Walter Reed. And how much of it is strictly antipathy towards this president?
Well, that antipathy, for those who feel it, only grows when he makes statements like that and when he transparently tries to connect all of this to disrespect for veterans, disrespect for the nation itself, disrespect for the flag, when most of the people, pretty close to all of the people who have made a gesture of one kind or another, have gone out of their way to make it clear that it's about calling attention to what they perceive, and many others do, black and white perceive, as a significant social issue in this country. And it's not meant to disrespect the flag, the country itself, and certainly not people who serve in the military. But it's an easy political stunt to try and make it that way. We live in a world where certain impressions, especially in certain echo chambers, work better than a fair and sober analysis of here are all the facts and here are all the statements, and let's try to come to a reasonable conclusion about what this really means. You push hot buttons, and regardless of what you think of Donald Trump, he is very good at pushing hot buttons that connect with his base. And he seems, whether it's because he's addicted to the applause and the affirmation or whatever, he seems to be more concerned with hearing applause from his base than expanding that base. And even though that base is loud and avid, that base is probably not large enough to get him reelected.
You know, we're talking about Costas on the Mike Lubica podcast. You know, we've had this conversation for months about Trump and his campaign. And I don't believe he made some brilliant political calculation the first time he started talking about the wall. I think he went out and he talked about the wall and the crowd went wild and he said, holy shit. Holy shit, that played. And you know, and then away he went. And then before long, it was a Muslim ban. I don't know if he planned in Huntsville in front of a crowd that, as I said in the column the other day, I imagine looked a lot like what an SEC football crowd would have looked like in 1955.
I don't know if he
planned to call these football players sons of bitches on Friday night. But once the crowd went wild, Bob, that is it to him. That is one of the great narcotics in the world.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And he is different, even if people take exception to some of what he says in other forums. He is different when he gets in front of a crowd in Phoenix or in Huntsville or wherever it may be. And when he replicates that campaign rally feeling, he plays off of that. He rides the wave of that. And to get back to your earlier question, the reaction now around the NFL from what started with some specific purpose with Colin Kaepernick, even though he may have been an imperfect messenger for it.
Right.
Now, what you're seeing, where it went from a handful of players kneeling or engaging in some kind of gesture to more than 250 by most estimates, that's a reaction specifically to what Trump said. That reaction is, hey, you don't call me or my teammates, or in many cases my fellow African Americans, sons of bitches, without me responding to it.
Right.
I don't even have to share their political views. I know these people as individuals. You're not going to dehumanize them and insult them without me in some way responding. And the way in which they responded, generally speaking, had a good deal more dignity to it than what provoked it.
And then the next day, Trump tweets the following. The issue of kneeling has nothing to do with race. It is about respect for country, flag, and national anthem. NFL must respect this. And you on CNN said, do you want a president of the United States who, even if you're giving him the benefit of that doubt, is so tone deaf to the racial implications of this? And you added, the idea that this doesn't have something to do with race is preposterous. And you know what, Bob? Because it is preposterous.
Of course. Of course it is. Every player in the initial stages, everyone that knelt or raised a fist or raised a voice happened to be African American. Now, before Trump issued his remarks, there were a handful of white players who put their hand on the shoulder of a kneeling black teammate, even as they stood, just to show their connection and compassion and understanding for their friend and their teammate. But essentially, this is an African-American protest. You don't have to agree with it in order to understand that there are sensitivities there, in order to respect their experience and their perspective and want to hear it, rather than condemning them as a bunch of SOBs. You know, a lot of people think, oh, that's just plain talk. Good for him. He's not in the throes of political correctness. Well, you and I both realize how stupid political correctness or extreme identity politics can be. It gets in the way of honest dialogue. It apparently exists to a worrisome extent on many of our university campuses. I'm no fan of it. But when we get to the point where we're beginning to say, at least some people, some of Trump's supporters, that mere understanding of our nation's racial history, mere sensitivity to the ongoing inequities, mere respect for perspectives that differ from your own is just political correctness, man, we've gone off the deep end.
We'll have more with Bob Costas after this from Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. Talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lubica podcast, and Bob, the idea that he lumped in everybody who is engaged in this form of protest is another thing that's completely preposterous, and he has no grasp or understanding of the American experience that has brought African-American athletes to this moment. However they got into this, okay, that you must respect their right to do this. And that chowder-headed Treasury Secretary of his, Steve Mnuchin, saying that they have First Amendment rights, but they're not allowed to exercise them on the field is completely preposterous. And again, you referenced Tommy Smith and John Carlos, okay? What they did in Mexico City was not just the workplace, it was the American workplace. It was an American workplace in front of the world, and they had their own reasons nearly 50 years ago. I understand that, but is it so tremendously different? The issues that they were raising fists about in Mexico City, are they so tremendously different than a player taking a knee a half century later?
Well, it was a different context. We still have problems. Those problems might have been even more acute or more widespread 50 years ago. And in the case of Smith and Carlos, remember, there were fewer platforms, there was less media, ESPN didn't exist, the internet didn't exist, talk radio as we now know it didn't exist, cable television didn't exist, and for a track and field star in America, this is your one moment in the spotlight. And when you look back on it, even though they were vilified, they were expelled from the Olympics before it was over, and it took decades before the Olympic movement re-embraced them, to a lot of Americans, that gesture, not just black Americans, but white Americans as well, that gesture did not mean screw America. It meant black people have a place in America. We want our rightful place in America. Black power doesn't have to mean a punch in the nose to white people. White people, as a group, have a certain amount of power or opportunity in the United States. Especially then, black people had nothing even remotely like that amount of power or opportunity. So it could have been read, I read it as a 16-year-old, as a dignified one time only because of the platform, and literally and figuratively, they had a platform. They were standing on the metal platform. A one time only declaration. We are part of this nation. Not just when we run for this nation, they put a medal around our necks. Thank you very much, and now go back to your place. We have a place in this country. And when you think back on it, and if you watch it, and the way they did it, and the way they stood, there was dignity in that, and it was a very moving and specific thing, and the message was not lost.
Talking to Bob Costas, and Bob, here's a point that you have made frequently to me, especially over the last couple of years, as there has been a greater demand for young athletes, particularly African-American athletes, to be so social activists. And how different it was for them in 68, and how different it was for Muhammad Ali, because they were not playing a team sport in this country.
Yeah, Arthur Ashe, a brilliant man, one of the most admirable and intelligent people I've met in any walk of life, let alone sports, Arthur Ashe played tennis. Muhammad Ali was the heavyweight champion of the world, and he was uniquely equipped because of his magnetic personality and because of how entertaining he was. Even when he was at his most polarizing and most threatening to a certain portion of white America, you couldn't take your eyes off of him. It was so entertaining to see him on television and to see him express himself. But he was not employed by a league. He was not a member of a team. And that does complicate this a little bit. To be technical, the First Amendment refers to the government's ability or inability to deny you the right to speak your mind. It doesn't mean that NBC or the New York Daily News or Sports on Earth couldn't fire you or me if they didn't like what we said, or if we repeatedly said things in such a way that they found offensive and damaging to the business. Whether or not it would be a smart thing to do, whether or not it would be fair and open-minded, that could always be debated. But the First Amendment does not apply to what you do while you are on your employer's time. If I decided that while I was broadcasting a baseball game on the MLB network, that I just wanted to read a few little thoughts that I had jotted down about the state of American foreign policy, the MLB network would be well within its rights and would not be abrogating my First Amendment rights if they disciplined or fired me. Now, that doesn't mean I think that NFL owners should do that with players who kneel, but there is a distinction between the First Amendment as it is written and every single circumstance that comes up in American life. They differ.
Bob, how do you think this ends? The reason I'm asking is, you know how essential it is for President Trump to claim victory in all matters, great and small. Okay,
right.
So even on Sunday, he the linking of arms sort of became, it was almost like he wanted us to think he thought of that,
right?
And somehow that validated what he was saying.
That they were showing they agreed with him, rather than they were showing that they stood against what he said, which is what they were doing.
And now Jerry Jones, in a tweet today, he's a winner in all ways, and he spoke to him, and he put a happy face on this. So how does this play out now? Is there a Sunday when – see, I don't think this is going to stop now. I think the genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
I think he has made an issue of something that has really ceased to be a major issue in American sports. So how do you see this playing out across this particular football season?
Yeah, he's amplified it, and I think it's going to go – beyond the NFL, I don't know how widespread. Bruce Maxwell, who I had never heard of, and you and I follow baseball, I'd never heard of Bruce Maxwell, backup rookie catcher for the Oakland A's, who are not in a pennant race. He did something this past weekend that I thought had a real touch of grace to it. He took a knee while holding his hand over his heart.
Yep.
He was born on a military base in Germany. He grew up in Alabama. I think what could very well happen, it might, underline might, dawn on some people that no matter how much we believe in the cause, and no matter how much we may feel we have the right to do it, we've certainly called attention to our issue. Now we have to think about what's the most effective way to change hearts and minds, or to really energize people who more or less agree with us. And so what you might see, I underline might, is players standing for the national anthem, but then taking a knee at the end of the national anthem, which would simultaneously respect the many things, including the ideals and aspirations and sacrifices that have been made on behalf of the country, as well as its flaws and shortcomings. Recognize that, respect that, but then take a knee as soon as the last note of the anthem has been struck. Then you would disarm people, except knuckleheads who want to make the argument no matter what. You disarm those who say you're disrespecting the flag. You stand for the anthem, then you take a knee, and you say, this is our America as well. Symbolically, you're saying that. This is our America as well. We respect the best of what the country stands for. We ask you to pay attention to the distance we still have to go. You could combine those two things in the same spotlight while the spotlight is on, because I think more and more you're going to see the networks doing what they did this past weekend, which is covering the anthem. People used to not really consider it missing they didn't see it. You know, more often than not, football telecasts, baseball telecasts actually time their commercials so that they're in commercial during the national anthem, unless it's a special event like a Super Bowl or a World Series or something where the singer is of special interest. But they usually try to be in commercial and come out of the commercial just after the anthem is over with. Now the anthem is, I think, going to be televised more often than not, because people are interested, at least for the time being, to see what the reaction would be. So you'd still have the same number of eyeballs, and if you did what I just suggested, I think maybe that's a step forward. But that's just my thought.
That is as good a way to put a bow on this particular discussion as anyway. I'm talking to my friend Bob Costas, who's making his third appearance on the Mike Lupica podcast, which is one more, Bob, than Larry David, who was on last week. And by the way, Bob, Larry David said shit on the Today Show today.
Did he really?
Matt, they finished talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm coming back on Sunday night. And then Matt says, you know, I always like to ask you at least one current events question. And he cites this University of Pennsylvania study that says that women are more attracted to and find more serious and powerful bald men.
Oh, yeah. I read that myself.
And Larry burst out laughing and said, that is a crock of shit. And Matt pointed out that it would be just a funny little sound when it was aired in the Midwest and on the West Coast. But, yeah, it went out live on the Today Show. And that's what our guy did today.
And this in a discussion with Matt Lauer, who was a fine-looking chap when he had a full head of hair, and now essentially is a bald man and still a fine-looking chap.
Yeah, because Bob, as they're having this bald conversation, I was wondering how Matt felt as Larry would like nod at Matt as though using him as a wingman in this particular notion. All right, a couple of things. What do you make of the feds? You know my theory of life. When somebody from the Southern District of New York comes for you, you're screwed. Okay,
What do you
make of basically the government saying, this is the way I took it anyway, if you can't police college sports, NCAA, we're going to do it for you?
Yeah, the corruption is so widespread, and no one's going to declare someone guilty while they still have the presumption of innocence. But you can generalize the corruption in college sports. And I'm talking about big-time college sports.
Right.
And that's mostly men's basketball and football, the revenue producers. The corruption and the absence of proportion and perspective is so widespread, even as tuition goes up, and part of that is student fees that that supplement the athletic department, even as there are other priorities that should be concentrated on, you have programs that aren't even national powers pouring tens of millions of dollars into athletic facilities and stadiums and crazy travel schedules, teams in New Jersey playing holiday tournaments in Oregon or something. It's just nuts. And it's all out of whack. And some of that obviously includes not just misplaced priorities, but bending and breaking the rules, not just of the NCAA, but federal law. Why should it be surprising? You want a swamp to drain? Here's a swamp that ought to be drained. And here's one place to start. It's a simple place, and it won't solve all the problems, but just go back to the time when freshmen were ineligible. So you cannot use somebody until they've arrived on campus and they've proven that they are a student. They don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar, but they have to be a legitimate student who could plausibly attend and succeed at this university, get passing grades, even if the university didn't have a football or basketball program. And someone outside the athletic department will monitor those admissions and monitor the academic progress of those students. Now, would that solve all these problems? No. But it would certainly slow things down. And you could give them 4 years of eligibility. In fact, they deserve it because the demands of travel and practice make it very difficult, even for someone who's honestly dedicated to being a student athlete, to go to all his classes, write all his term papers, read all the books, and then also dedicate all the time that's demanded from big-time college sports. So give them a five-year scholarship, but you can't play, except freshman ball that takes place on campus or in a small travel radius, you can't play until you're a sophomore and until you've proven that you belong here as a student.
And, you know, we're talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lupica podcast. You know, I take no joy, and neither do you, in what happened to Rick Pitino today. And you would call it a fall from grace, but except there have been a previous falls for Rick. Bob, you step back from this man's career, okay? He not only won championships at Kentucky and Louisville, two of the iconic programs in college basketball. In the same lifetime, he has also coached the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics, and coached one of the most improbable Final Four teams, the Billy Donovan-led Providence team of 30 years ago. And it just shows you that in that world, you are constantly, and I don't know how vigilant you can be, and I make no presumption to know what he knew about the money that was allegedly paid to this young man on his basketball team through a sneaker company. I make no presumption of that, okay? But you're existing on the margins in that sport, whether you want to or not.
Yeah, and again, this is not about Rick. I'm making no presumption about the facts of his case. That'll come out in due course. But generally speaking, what you have in a lot of areas in sports is people who are control freaks, very vigilant about every aspect of what they're involved in, but there's some kind of wink-wink thing going on, like, hey, I need plausible deniability here. I don't want my fingerprints on this. And so you have a lot of baseball people from the 90s who would notice if a guy's arm angle dropped by 2 degrees because he was getting tired and he was losing a little bit of snap on his slider in the seventh inning. They'd notice that. They'd notice if a guy took half a step closer to the third base bag or moved in half a step if a guy who could bunt was at the plate. They noticed every nuance of the game, but they didn't notice that a guy who used to weigh 180 suddenly weighed 228, and that he was suddenly hitting opposite field home runs, sometimes while breaking his bat. Some of that just escaped their attention. And the same thing is true in college sports. I don't want to know. If some of it happens, you know, I guess it just happened. But I do want to know everything else. I know everything else about a third-string linebacker. Everything else. And I've planned my practices literally down to the minute. I'm a control freak in capital letters. But there's stuff I just don't want to know.
All right. Listen, before we finish today, and Costas goes off to do things that, but for which he might even get paid, other than doing this podcast, we have to talk just for a few minutes about...
You mean I'm not getting paid?
Well, I said yesterday when I asked you if you would do this today that I would pay you, but I lied. Okay, so, all right. The baseball playoff
for the soul.
The baseball playoffs are upon us. Even as we have this conversation, the AL East isn't quite over between the Red Sox and the Yankees. We have, Bob, I think there are 8 teams, and I'm probably dismissing teams that have a chance, that could win the World Series this year. And I just wrote a column this morning about what I think is an incredibly undercovered story. The Minnesota Twins are, if not mathematically in, or they're about to be mathematically into the second wild card, will be the first team ever to go from losing 100 games to making the postseason the next year. This has been an extraordinary regular season in baseball, even with so many blowout races in so many different divisions.
Yeah, in fairness, when you talk about the Twins, they're making it as the second wild card. So That's only a playoff spot that has been available for a very few years.
Right,
so I don't
right.
think it's as remarkable as, let's say, the 1991 World Series, when both participants, the Braves and the Twins, went from last place in their divisions the year before all the way to a seven-game World Series. But still, it's noteworthy that the Twins did lose more than 100 games last year, and apparently they're going to get to October. And here's the thing. They would definitely be, even though they have some very good young players and a very good manager in Paul Molitor, they would definitely be the weakest of the 10 playoff teams, counting the wild card participants. But if Irvin Santana throws a gem, and he's already thrown three shutouts this year, and although he has a bad record at the new Yankee Stadium, the last time he pitched there about 10 days ago, although he was the losing pitcher, it was a close game, and he pitched well into the sixth inning. If Irvin Santana goes out and throws a gem against the Yankees, a Yankee team that's good enough to be a factor deep into the postseason could be out in the blink of an eye. Now, that's what the Indians are hoping for. The Indians are hoping they play the Twins best of five rather than the Yankees best of five. But once you get into this kind of a crapshoot, not just the single-game wild card, but the first round is best of five with two potential off days if they go five full games, you can get some very fluky results. Any team good enough to get to October could, in a five-game series, beat any team, even the best of the 10.
Bob, how much do you think Terry Francona and the way he began managing from game one against the Red Sox has sort of changed everybody's thinking in the postseason? I mean, we were talking a couple of days ago about what, say it's Sonny Gray that Joe Girardi starts in a wild card game. And again, please, I am not ruling out the fact that the Yankees might still be able, with all the Red Sox injuries, to catch them in the East, okay?
Probably not.
But you were saying he can ask Sonny. Well, you tell what you said. Sonny Gray's only got to give him like four lights out innings.
Yeah, if you're talking about a single game, especially the one you have to win before you can think about anything else, no matter who Girardi selects to start that game, and most people think it would be Severino, but you have other possibilities, you say to that guy, give me everything you got for five. And even if it's just for four, if you give me four good innings, and if the hitters coming up at the fifth line up in such a way that I should go to my bullpen, the Yankees have five guys in their bullpen with closer stuff.
Yep.
Five. And in a single-game situation, who's to say, if you had a couple of left-handers coming up, that you couldn't use Jaime Garcia to pitch to those left-handers? I mean, it's all hands on deck to win that one game, and then you figure out what you do down the line. But what Francona showed is something that should have been obvious earlier, which is that, well, yeah, you designate one guy as your closer, and everybody in baseball tells you there's a different mentality pitching the ninth as opposed to pitching the eighth. I've taken to saying on these broadcasts on MLB late in the game, let's say it's the seventh inning and a rally is going, this may not be the Twins or whoever it is, may not be their last chance, but it might be their best chance. And if, in fact, every fan in the park knows it's their best chance, why shouldn't the opposing manager say, I'm going to put my best reliever in this situation because the game is on the line right now. So I'm going to use him like relievers used to be used, as firemen. Put out the fire. And if we get through this, then we'll see what the rest of the bullpen can do, especially because they're not a bunch of bums. Every team has at least two good relievers. The Yankees have four or five good relievers. And something else that no one ever says is, if you have a lead and you protect it and you get out of a jam, now you're going to come up to bat at least once more. Let's say it's the eighth inning, or you're on the road, it's the bottom of the eighth, and you're coming up in the ninth. You're going to have a chance to pad your lead. So maybe the next reliever will have a little bit more breathing room, but in any case, he's going to start with the bases empty. That's what Francona showed last year when he used Andrew Miller whenever it seemed like it was the right time to use Andrew Miller, and it was a very effective formula.
All right, a couple more questions about the postseason. One,
are these answers long enough? Are these answers fulsome enough?
Yeah, because you know what the hell you're talking about. Okay, what I always look at, especially in a five-game series, especially in a five-game series, is who's starting game one and game two for me? And all of a sudden, the way Keuchel has come back and the way Justin Verlander has pitched before and after he got to Houston, man, Cy Young and then Cy Young is not a bad way to start for a team, Bobby, who seems to be finishing the way it began this season.
Yeah, and against Boston, who earlier in the season you would have said, well, they're going to have Chris Sale, who up until recently seemed to have the Cy Young wrapped up, and it looks like Corey Kluber has caught him and passed him. You got Chris Sale. You got last year's Cy Young Award winner in Rick Porcello. You got David Price, who obviously hasn't done much of anything for them this year. But on paper, you would have thought that it would be Boston that would have had the starting pitching edge against almost any other team. And of course, once they get to the back of their bullpen, then they got a lights out guy there. But as you said, the whole season isn't what matters. It's what do you got right now, and what the Astros have working right now is pretty good. They don't know what the availability of Lance McCullers will be, but their first two guys pretty darn good.
Yankees are extremely dangerous. The Dodgers are of the first to 100 have become a mystery guest. Okay, last question.
Yeah.
When can people expect to hear or watch you first during the baseball postseason?
First and last, because I'm only doing one game. The way this works is the MLB Network, which of course is owned by the league, wants to put some games on that network, but not at the expense of the people who pay them a lot of money, which is Fox and Turner. So we get two games. Last year it was one from each of the National League Division Series. This year it's one from each of the American League Division Series. And what will happen is FS1 will take whatever series the Yankees are in. So if the Yankees win the wild card game and play the Indians, Vasgersian and Smoltz are going to do that whole series for FS1. So I told the people at MLB they might as well do whatever game would be on MLB Network. They're there already. And then Jim Cott and I will do the game from the other series. So if the Yankees win the wild card game, I'll do game two, I think, of Boston and Houston in Houston. If the Twins beat the Yankees, then I think I'll do game two of Twins at Cleveland. For those of you keeping track at home, I have plane reservations and hotel reservations in both Cleveland and in Houston.
Thank you for doing this today. You were great today.
You're welcome. I'm out of breath.
And here's the thing. I'm sorry I lied about paying you, but I just you just put it on what I owe you over the last 35 years, and we will settle up at some point.
Oh, you know, there are many ways to pay up. Cash is only one of them. You'll pay. Trust me, you'll pay.
Bob Costas, the first three-time guest on the Mike Lubica podcast. We are way past 100,000 downloads. Keep doing this. Go to the comments section. This is the kind of conversation we have every single week. And after watching Bob on CNN the other day, there's nobody else I wanted to talk about the whole Anthem thing than with him. Again, download, subscribe, go to the comments section. I'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lupica Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica Podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.